This is Women's Health Week. That's an exciting thing, especially, well, whether you're a bloke or a woman, because a healthy woman is a happy woman, in my humble experience. Yeah. Kimberly Carty, you are an exercise physiologist.
Yeah, that's right.
What does an exercise physiologist do when they're at home?
So, when we're at home?
Yeah, well, no, when you're at work, yes.
When we're at work. We use exercise to prevent and manage chronic conditions. So things like heart disease, diabetes, chronic injuries. So all our treatment is using exercise in some form or way to manage the conditions.
Okay.
So I'm actually with, I work privately with the gym in Apollo Base and come down once a fortnight. So I'm here today on a Thursday.
Oh, are you? Okay. And you specialise in women's health, or because it's Women's Health Week, you know?
Yes. So I do work with women's health, but I work with a whole range of different conditions. But, yeah, we're really focusing on women's health at the moment.
Hi, Kimberly. How are you?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Good, good. Thanks for joining us for our promotion of Women's Health Week.
Well, thanks for having me.
So, obviously, we really want to focus in on all our gal pals. I'm really, really interested in hearing what you have to say about how anybody, any age, can just move to the groove to keep it working.
Yeah, so I guess the main thing is to continue moving throughout our life, from changing life, so when we're working to when we're retirement, making sure we continue to be active because there's so many benefits. And as our bodies change, it's important to keep it up. But a lot of people do forget about it when life gets in the way. So we need to be doing a whole range of different things to keep our health, up to speed, I guess.
So how do you work out what's extra up beyond what's normal daily activity? Many of us are really, really busy and we think we're really physical. Yeah. But how do we determine what needs to be done extra for our health benefits?
Okay, so I guess the biggest thing, and this is where we, as an exercise physiologist, we look at your health condition. So everyone's very different, especially as we're aging. We tend to see a lot of chronic conditions coming into play. And exercise in some forms, it can be really good for one condition, but then the same exercise may not benefit the other condition. So we need to look at all your conditions and see what's beneficial for you. So that's where we would sit down and go through, okay, what are your health conditions? Do you have any? Or is any form of exercise safe for you? We'd look at things like aerobic exercise. So that's going for a walk, a swim, a jog, a bike ride, getting your heart rate up to keep your heart nice and strong. And then we also look at things like strength training. So that can be from using your own body weight at home. There's lots of things we can do to using gym equipment like weights, TheraBands, and so on. Yeah.
And before Bob launches into his questions, I've got one more quick one. I was listening to another radio show driving to Melbourne yesterday, and they were talking about a study that's just come out about people moving regularly, that sitting at your desk is the new smoking of the 21st century. I was wondering your thoughts on that.
Definitely, and that we do focus on that a lot. A lot of people, as you said, we think we're doing a lot, but we're sitting at our desk all day, so we might be doing our 30 minutes of exercise. But the actual physical activities throughout the day is very, very small. So what the 30 or 60 minutes that we're doing isn't actually enough to overpower sitting all day. So just breaking up sitting time now is being found to actually have some benefits for us, or even standing at our desk instead of sitting down can also be beneficial as well because we're using our muscles. We're not just using the chair as an aid.
So
but yes, that's a massive one actually at the moment.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the standing desk. I've been sitting on one of those ball things forever. People laugh.
Yep.
So tell me, if I'm a 55-year-old woman and I've had a couple of kids and they're off being busy and I just kind of cook and I clean and I've probably got a bit of a job somewhere and I've got a little bit of arthritis kicking in and probably carry a few extra kilos, what would you be doing with me?
So I would be looking at where your arthritis is. So say if you've got arthritis in your knees, doing a few strengthening exercises to support that knee joint. Then I would be also looking at are you active so you may be doing existing and cleaning, as you said, but
your call could not be connected.
We've had a dropout in the call.
Lost Kimberly.
Never mind. We'll sort that out in a little while. This is 3ABR, the Apollo Bay, a surprise edition, surprising to us, of the Apollo Bay Health Check.
Yeah, so I would be looking at doing some strengthening exercises and then aerobic exercise. As you said, if you've gained a little bit of weight, getting that heart rate up is really important. I think people forget about that, or they might be too scared. They don't know what they're able to do. They're going too far. So we'd do a little bit of an assessment of where is safe for you and go from there. So strengthening and aerobic together. So not just walking and not just strengthening, putting them both together, they're both beneficial.
So you have probably one of the best jobs. People say that a lot, but your job, when people do the things that you're advising them to do,
yes,
they always come out better off, don't they?
They do, and that's the thing. It's exercise is like a medicine, but you get so many benefits from it. It's not just benefiting it, you know, a certain one condition. We're helping your whole body, and it's keeping mobile. So as we age, we tend to slow down a bit. So the more fit we stay and the more things we keep doing, the stronger we're going to be for the rest of our lives as well. So, yeah, it is. It's a very rewarding job seeing people sort of change their lifestyle or just maintain what they're doing. I've got a lady that's 90 at the moment and she's still doing her exercises and she's doing everything around the house and looking after herself. So it's very exciting seeing things like that.
All right, one last question.
Yeah.
You ready for it?
Yes.
What is the key to staying motivated?
I think once you start, you can feel the benefit of being, you know, increasing your fitness. You feel good. You want to get out. You want to do things. It's a vicious cycle, but a positive cycle when you're actually doing something. So I think the biggest motivation is actually, you know, it keeps you being able to do things as we age. So being active, having coffee with friends, you know, you can walk down the street, you feel fit, you want to get up in the morning, you want to go for a walk, you know, you want to get out and do things. So motivation, it lasts, really, is the motivation.
Yeah,
so
the feeling, the payoff is the motivation. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, thank you very much for talking to us. Do you have a last question for Kimberly?
No, just thanks, Kimberly. Lovely listening to you.
Thank you very much for having me on.
So that's Kimberly Carty, exercise physiologist, and she's available through the gym here at Apollo Bay. So have a pop into the gym and don't be afraid to go to the gym. It's great. I go to the gym. Don't be afraid of that either. Thanks for talking to us.
Thank you very much.
Bye, Kimberly.
Bye for now.
Bye.
The road to success is just an old cliche, but I'm going to the top, so buddy, don't get in my way.
This is Women's Health Week. That's an exciting thing, especially, well, whether you're a bloke or a woman, because a healthy woman is a happy woman, in my humble experience. It's Women's Health Week, and shortly, very shortly, we'll be talking on the telephone to Katrina White. Katrina White, she's a GP who will be known to people here in Apollo Bay because she works here, does a women's clinic, I think, once a month or something, and works on weekends and loves the bay. We all do. That's why we wind up here. So we'll just have a little bit of music. This is a special edition for Women's Health Week of the Apollo Bay Health Check. We're on the radio with Dr. White, Katrina White.
That's right.
Dr. Katrina White.
That's me.
How long have you been? It's pretty silly when people say practicing medicine, isn't it? Because, like, you're not really practicing anymore, are you?
We learn every day. So.
Yeah. Well, I suppose there is that. Yeah, yeah.
About 15 years has been my full-time work.
Women's Health Week, what does it mean to you?
Oh, so women's health is sort of my bread and butter from my general practice. I do a little bit of everything, but you sort of attract those patients that are comfortable discussing their issues with you. And every year that it comes around, I think women just are a little bit more aware. And we have lots to talk about, but it's just it's a good awareness week, I think, and great that the community is doing something about it this year.
Is there a single issue for women that looms larger than others for you?
I think it would be all pretty specific to the individual. Women are quite good with preventative health, looking out for things they should be aware of and symptoms that are different for them. And I guess I'm talking about menopause when I'm doing my presentation next week, but that is a big hurdle for some women because I think everyone just sort of puts it in too hard basket, but it doesn't have to be that way. So, but it is specific to the individual. Some sail through that transition in life with no issues, and others are really struggling.
Hi, Katrina. It's Deb Terraza from Otway Health.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. We're really, really excited about your involvement with our night next week, the
yes,
something
great.
Special. In particular, talking about menopause, I had a couple of questions I was interested in. One was talking about surgically induced menopause, but maybe that's perhaps a question you could answer after you could give us a bit more of an overview about menopause and what happens.
Yeah, so different forms of menopause. Menopause is simply defined as a transition in life where your hormones change. I sort of parallel it to a little bit like puberty, where your body gets used to things and you have to sort of transition with it. But for some people, it's just a matter of your menstruation years stop and things are a little different. But for others, it's quite a dramatic change. And when it's surgical, when you've gone in and had the hysterectomy and have your ovaries removed, it really can be quite dramatic. And that's looked as upon a more needing treatment sort of phase, because it might be a younger woman that's used to having a higher level of estrogen in her body. But others will go through it and embrace the change and take on the treatment and do quite well with it. So I try not to think of it as a disease at all, but more just a transition in life.
So what are the most common symptoms that women do experience through a menopausal phase that seem to cause them the most concern?
Probably the first is sleep disturbances, and that might be simply flushing, which is a low estrogen state, or it might just be their concentration has declined, or their energy, or they feel that they're quite moody. And they might be sent in because someone in the family has commented they're very moody, or they feel they're not quite. And some will even come to see me and they've been put on antidepressants, which is not a wrong situation at all, but it maybe not be addressing the underlying reason why they're feeling not themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But there might be a lot going on in their life. Every woman's got things going on at stages in their life. Maybe their children are going off to university, or maybe they have young children. There's such a variety of changes in life at different stages. And that might just be maybe they've got an elderly parent and they're looking after them and they're going through a change of life that's really challenging for them.
Yeah, it's certainly a time frame within people's lives that there are lots and lots of influences and environmental influences that can make life challenging, really, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. And we certainly, life expectancy-wise, if you look back in generations before, we get through menopause and have a whole chapter afterwards, whether you're 40, 50, or even I've women 55 that haven't quite finished their menopausal change, and that's nothing wrong with that. That's just when the body's changing. And it's just addressing these issues along the way. I would say a lot of women come to me and just want reassurance as to what they're experiencing, symptoms they have, that's normal and that's okay.
Yeah. Do you think there's a much better acceptance nowadays of the normality of menopause?
Absolutely. Probably about 15, 20 years ago when I was in my training or just finishing my training, the whole HRT, hormone replacement therapy, hit the publicity even in everyday literature that it was dangerous and we shouldn't take it. And it was an interesting transition because we'd been trained with give women HRT, hormone replacement is what they need to keep their arteries safe and their bones dense and all those things that are really important. And then we had to work our way back and to say, well, actually, hormone replacement still has a role. We have to have an awareness of who should take it and what risk factors they might have. But it still very definitely is on my offering list to women who have significant symptoms.
Okay. My other question before I let Bob join the gal pal conversation is, do you think, I know this only affects a small percentage of women, but do you think there's any connection between the higher incidence of IVF that occurs with women these days and what might be seen in relation to menopause later on down the track?
And that's a very good question that a lot of us are waiting to see an answer to. But I am very involved with women seeing me for fertility issues and helping them through that journey. And I ensure that they have screening, for example, mammograms before they're having estrogen treatment, you know, for a series of years ahead of themselves. Mm. And it's just something that's going to come out of the literature, which is what every phase of learning from hormone use in the past has been like. So
yeah.
It's a difficult question, but I think if we're all aware of where our risk factors are and what screening is available to us, and that's to an individual one-on-one with your doctor discussing that, but I think we can all still continue to use things and have fertility treatments and not be scared about that.
So I might just flag the fertility conversation for us to have another day, because I think that's a really interesting combo as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm quite big on discussing that with women, because I think it's sort of the unspoken subject, but I think it's really important because it's different for everyone and what stage they are in their life.
Thanks for phoning us this morning, Katrina. So you're speaking on
Friday night,
I beg your pardon, the 9th.
Of September, yep. When we have our Women's Something Fabulous night.
Is that what it's called, Something Fabulous?
It's called Something Fabulous, and we're holding it for Women's Health Week, Friday the 9th of September. And we're so delighted that Katrina and several other delightful women have joined us, and it will be commencing at 6:30 at the Cranbrook. I always get that word
Cranbrook
wrong. Cranbrook room at the Apollo Bay Hotel, $25 a head, and tickets are available from Bendigo Bank in Apollo Bay, and inquiries can be made through Sally at Otway Health on 5237 8500.
And I think we just lost Katrina again.
We did.
Yeah. So you can answer the question for her. And that is, she's here in Apollo Bay on once a month?
On an average, once a month.
Once a month.
And at the GP clinic. And if people wanted to make an appointment, they could just ring the clinic and inquire about her dates of availability.
Terrific. This is the rest of, well, it's Women's Health Week, so we've extended ourselves further with the Apollo Bay Health Check. Deborah Giraz is in the studio again. Can't keep her away, could I?
Hi, Bob.
How are you doing?
Great and improving.
Great and improving. Today's rooster, tomorrow's feather duster.
That's you, apparently. As you advised me this morning, I haven't been able to stop thinking about that all day, Bob.
Well, ultimately, it's true for all of us.
Very. Yes, very.
Hi, Cheryl.
Hello, Bob.
Cheryl Biddle's going to be talking to us a bit later, but Tanya Harkness is going to... Harkness, isn't it?
Yes.
He's going to be chatting to us first about what goes on between your ears, really.
I'm just thinking about you being a rooster. You're sitting here with a couple of chicks, so I think your feather duster days are a lot earlier than Cheryl and mine, just quietly, Bob.
Oh, really?
Have to make that point.
I'll have you know I come from a gene pool of long-lived bad livers.
Well, we'll talk men's health another week.
Indeed.
This week it's women.
It is. And how's it all going? We're getting ahead of steam around this women's event you've got?
We seem to be. So as we've discussed earlier, Something Fabulous will be on Friday the 9th of September, kicking off at 6:30 at the pub. Mm-hmm. Top pub, bottom pub. I get my pubs confused.
Bottom pub.
The bottom pub. Thanks, Cheryl. I get my two pubs back the front. And we've got a great program lined up, and the wonderful women who we've spoken with today and are about to speak to will be joining us on that night to talk more about their expertise and what they know around women's health. And more than 50% of the population are affected by women's health, so our gal pals are important.
I think that it's more like 90. However, take out a few gay blokes, and women's health directly affects at least one bloke, and often more.
Absolutely. I heard an amazing statistic yesterday on the wireless while I was driving along. More than 80 women are over the age of 100 are being looked after by Legacy.
Wow.
Still,
wow.
War That's widows.
Amazing, isn't it?
Isn't that an extraordinary statistic?
Yep.
I can't get my words out. I was blown away when I heard that.
That is incredible.
Yeah. So yeah. Women do live longer.
Yeah, they do, especially if they look after themselves.
That's right.
Or have themselves looked after. Well,
and that's anyway. What it's all about, this Women's Health Week.
Okay, then any minute now, young Tanya's going to ring us. Will we play a bit of Paul Simon while that happens?
Sounds fair enough.
You're a Paul Simon fan, aren't you? I can tell. It's time to chat about what goes on between women's ears. Tanya Harkness, local psychologist.
Women's brains. Good news is they're not very different to men's brains, we don't think.
Is that the story, really?
Well, I don't think at this point in time there's not massive neuroscience differentiation. So I think that, yeah, although anecdotally that would not appear to be the case.
Well, it's probably just the hormones that make the difference.
Possibly, yeah, and the chemical balance, that could be the case, absolutely. But hardware, not much different.
Okay, so what do you do that brings you into the situation to be counselling and helping people, women, in this area?
Well, I'm trained as a psychologist, and I've been working in Apollo Bay for 5 years. And I suppose one of my particular interests at the moment is the research into neuroscience and how that impacts on our brain functioning.
Mm.
And obviously menopause is one of those life transition stages, which seems to, although interestingly there's no sort of definitive clinical link between menopause and any mental health issue, anecdotally that doesn't appear to be the case. So one, I think, around the anxiety perhaps associated with a transition, and also some of the side effects of menopause, such as lack of sleep, can obviously have a pretty significant impact on your mood state.
Hi, Tanya. It's Deb here. Hi, are you?
Hi, Deb. I'm good. How are you going?
Good. Thanks for joining in with the other fantastic gal pals to talk about women's health with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
I'm really, really fascinated by what you just said. And we were talking to a GP earlier about menopause as well. And she talked about the sleep disturbances. Yeah. And it suddenly struck me that just about every phase of women's life are affected by sleep in one way or another.
Absolutely.
And it's just quite extraordinary how the balance of sleep can, something so simple can hold things in such a balance.
And you know, one of the fascinating things in terms of our understanding of sleep now, really with the advent of neuroimaging, our understanding and knowledge about sleep has become much more sophisticated. And we understand now that sleep is such an incredibly important component of mood regulation. And is very associated with mood disorder, therefore.
So I'm sitting here thinking about grandchildren who don't get told that they have to go to sleep anymore and how they get cranky so quickly.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you can see it right through the ages, can't we? All get cranky when we're tired.
And I think, you know, there's so many components to that. One, I think the research would suggest that a lot of us aren't getting enough sleep, and not only that, that our sleep preparedness routine, particularly with the advent of sort of technology.
And social media. Everything that goes ping all through the night.
Yep, and we go straight from watching television or being on the computer to expecting to go to sleep, and that's not how our brain functions.
That's fascinating. I hadn't given that much thought before.
No, it is. It's really significant impact, the whole thing with sleep, yeah.
Tanya, I read something. This is Cheryl here. I read something the other day saying it's not just our poor sleep hygiene, but it's also our response to sleep. That, you know, perhaps years ago, decades ago, if not centuries ago, we'd go to sleep, you know, when it was dark.
Mm.
We may wake up around midnight and, you know, have sex, go to the toilet, do whatever needed to be doing, go back to sleep and then wake up again, you know, with daybreak. And now we lie there stressing about the fact that we're not sleeping. So it's not just our poor sleep hygiene, it's our response to waking in the middle of the night and what we do about it. So do we get on our iPhones and check our Facebook status at 2 a.m. or do we roll over and go back to sleep? Or nudge the other half.
There's a couple of things there. I think culturally it shifts, you know, it's very independent. You know, obviously for Mediterranean cultures, they've never had that concept of sort of that 8 hours sleep overnight. You know, they've had it as more of an aggregate. And I think that we need to perhaps think about sleep more as an aggregate. The ideal sleep is between 6.5 to 8.5 hours per 24-hour cycle. How we take that, or how we add that up, is probably quite independent and not necessarily just that one block.
So you're talking about the siesta is a really good initiative and innovation I should introduce, especially in the CEO office.
I'll support it.
Nap for other people, better nap. And then, of course, what in terms of how we sleep, if we do wake up, they do say don't spend more than 20 minutes lying awake in bed thinking I need to go to sleep. Just get up and actually do something, not probably high arousal, so not getting on your iPhone, but just quietly doing some relaxation or perhaps having a cup of chamomile tea or... but
one of the worst things to do is just lie there and get increasingly more stressed because you're telling yourself that you're not going to get the required amount of sleep and you're going to be cactus the next day. Mm.
So just moving on from sleep, what are some of the other issues and some of the other things about well-being for all of us women and how we should be looking after and nurturing ourselves, because we often leave ourselves to last?
Oh, absolutely. One of the things that I'm going to talk about at the night next week is actually a program that's come out of Monash Uni, specifically developed by Dr. Craig Hassard, which is called the Essence Program of Wellbeing. And that's an acronym for seven of the aspects that we really need to be looking at in terms to maintain our mental health. And I think we're pretty good on exercise and nutrition. Our understanding about that is pretty solid, I think. There's been a lot of psychoeducation and understanding. But, you know, stress management and connectedness and even what he labels spirituality, but, you know, we actually interpret that more as a sense of meaning or purpose. They're coming out more and more in the literature as being really important to maintaining our overall both physical and mental fitness.
Mm. Well, look forward to hearing more about that.
It's a good program.
At Something Fabulous in Apollo Bay.
I have a question. Tanya,
yep.
So you're talking about people negotiating the change that comes with menopause.
Mm-hmm.
The change itself, regardless of what it's about, is a stressor and affects your health and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, is menopause all that different, or is it such, because it's such a big change and it marks the entry into old age?
Well, that is, that's right.
Grief.
And a bit of grief, and I think I think it's such a complex relationship. I think for some women, Bob, it's about perhaps the changing relationship with their body. For other people, for other women, it might be more about what that, you know, literally that change into from middle age, perhaps into older age. Or I think it's very individual, the response to it. You know, women are very defined these days by our sense of body image and you know, our function of our body. So when that changes, I think that can be quite traumatic even for some people.
Tanya, can I take you back a step?
A
couple of weekends ago, I was at the Mums and Bubs Expo in Melbourne.
Yeah.
And the number one question I was getting from women coming up to me was, you know, pelvic floor safe exercise, you know, where can I go, who can I see, all the rest.
Yeah.
But there seems to be an incredible amount of pressure on you mums to be the yummy mummy so quickly. And I'm seeing so many women who are damaging their pelvic floor because they're trying to do too much too soon.
Yeah.
That pressure there, do you think it's growing or do you think it's always been there? Or?
Oh, no, I think it's growing. I personally just sort of think that, absolutely, it's the superwoman phenomenon, isn't it? That you have a baby, you go back to being what you were pre-baby within, a month or two? It's almost the expectation.
You know, one of the talks I was listening to the other night on painful sex was saying that, you know, again, women have this expectation that they should be back and sexually active within 6 weeks, whereas the statistics are showing it's actually more realistic to think 6 months to 12 months.
Well, and even, I mean, and that's just purely the actual physical aspect, I think, in terms we don't even take into account the emotional and the fatigue and everything else, do we? And just even the change, again, for your change of your, what you see as your body and the function of your body, and when you're breastfeeding particularly, I'm not sure if you see those as necessarily particularly sexual organs. So, no, I think there is an and I think the same thing with menopause. I think we tend to really categorise ourselves into sort of certain levels, and then so therefore when we move from one perceived level into another, that can be quite upsetting, I think, to someone. So therefore, you know, there's a notion of menopause perhaps means, I don't know, barrenness and sagginess and everything that sort of seems to be the caricature of that. Stage in our lives.
Mm, it's fascinating. I'm just sitting here and thinking about so many different aspects of it, and just what it all means to go through the phases of life, and to what women's health. There's just so much more than just the physical, isn't there? About your health.
Look, my great hope is that we start saying health rather than physical and mental. Because, you know, the more we understand how interrelated they are. What's good for the brain is good for the body. What's good for the body is good for the brain.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I must say that I'm sure it's the same across the sexes. If I feel a bit blue, all I have to do is jump up and down for half an hour.
Yeah.
Go and chase a sheep or jump in the gym.
Hop on and
you feel better. It's that simple, really. It's extraordinary. Tanya, it's been delightful hearing what you have to say, and I'm sure lots of folk will be very interested in what you have to say on the night.
Terrific, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak.
Hey, that's what we do here at ABR.
Thanks for being part of it.
It's my pleasure.
It's on 3ABR, the Apollo Bay Health Check, especially this week about women, because it's Women's Health Week. A girl in New York City calling herself a trampoline. That's not the sort of thing you ought to be talking about on Women's Health Week.
No, absolutely not.
But it's a pretty good album, all the same. And look, she just might like to jump around a lot.
Mm.
Cheryl Biddle.
Yes. Going to be talking on Friday night about strengthening your pelvic floor.
You just love that pelvic floor,
don't
you?
I do love the pelvic floor. And it's good for men too, but, you know, next week it's all about women.
Yep.
The Jean Hales, one of their themes is what is normal.
Mm.
And I think that's really important. I'm hearing all the time, and I'm getting a little bit off topic, but we're staying down in the nether regions, that, you know, girls as young as 18 are visiting plastic surgeons for labioplasties because their boyfriends are complaining that they don't look the way...
Yeah, they don't look pretty enough.
Don't look the way that they see on TV or on the internet.
YouTube. Yeah.
It terrifies me. You know, mainly what the referring specialist will do, we'll sit them down and show them 100 different slides or 200 different slides that we all look different and that's the way we're made and there's nothing wrong with that.
Have you seen the installation at MoMA?
Yes.
Which is just fabulous.
It might be an interesting thing or off topic, whatever, but men's health issues like erectile dysfunction came right to the fore with the invention of Viagra. Mm. You know, suddenly there's a product to sell, so it's out there in the market and we're talking about it. It's not a hidden thing anymore. For women, it still is.
Mm.
And the pelvic floor fits very much with painful sex and functioning. And the statistics show that it can be as high as, at any one time, 80% of women persisting with painful sex. And I touched on this before about rushing back to sexual intimacy too soon
after childbirth.
And unfortunately, if you suffer through painful sex because you think it's the right thing to do, you're setting yourself up for disaster.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, once the body experiences pain with a certain activity, it expects pain with a certain activity.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, for women to have successful sex, one of the things you need to do is feel relaxed and safe.
Mm.
And if you're lying there thinking this is going to hurt, well, you can guarantee it is going to hurt.
Yep.
So pelvic floor strengthening, believe it or not, can help with that, help women gain control over their pelvic floor, make it stronger, but also learn how to relax it, learn how to have a good relationship with your pelvic floor. I know I've said it in here once. It's important.
I'm sure it is.
Again, at the Mums and Bubs Expo, somebody came up to me and said, oh, yeah, my personal trainer told me that my pelvic floor was strong enough if I could do a star jump with a full bladder and, you know, not lose any wee. And, I mean, that's what we were telling people 20 years ago. That is not the guidance now, thankfully. We've come a long way. And again, you know, 30% of women don't know how to do a pelvic floor contraction. When they think they're actually lifting things up and in, they're actually pushing things down and out.
Yeah.
So that rushing, you know, back to exercise, back to heavy physical activities, thinking that you're strong and fit and you're doing the right thing when you're actually overwhelming your pelvic floor is really dangerous.
But this stuff can all be learnt fairly simply.
It can all be learnt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, people have different abilities to learn physical exercises.
Yeah.
Differently.
Yep.
And again, another thing that I'm seeing is we are so abdominal conscious. We're so used to holding our stomachs in case Brad Pitt walks in or or Angelina Jolie for you, that a lot of women are struggling with their pelvic floor because they're just absolutely overwhelming it with their abdominal contractions.
Okay.
It's like a pressure system. If you think of from the diaphragm down your stomach down to your pelvic floor, that's one pressurized unit.
Yep.
If you're pulling in the pressure at the front with your stomach, and the pressure's going to alter with your diaphragm as you breathe, the only other place it can go is down to your pelvic floor.
Okay.
If your pelvic floor can't match that, it's going to be overwhelmed.
Okay.
Wow. The good news is, though, that you can do a quiet little PF workout and no one knows what's going on, do they?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We could be doing it right now, you wouldn't know.
Oh, you'd be sitting up straighter, I think.
Not necessarily. Not it's necessarily. A graduation.
Oh, there you go.
Cheryl, ask Bob, how does he know that? How does he know that physiology?
So you'll be speaking again at this, you're speaking at this event on Thursday?
Yes.
Or Friday?
Yes. I'm hoping to sort of fill in the gap. So I definitely want to talk about the pelvic floor, but I'm hoping to go a little bit where the audience wants to go.
Yep.
Definitely I'll talk about continence because it's a big issue and it affects, you know, women all through their life. It affects men too and it affects children. But, you know, I will do want to talk about pelvic pain because it is a reasonably common phenomenon and people don't talk about it. You actually have to ask women if you want to know about it. They never volunteer it.
Mm. Well, I think Friday night's going to be a huge success by the sound of it. There'll certainly be lots of stuff to chat about. And you're putting on some nibbles or some food?
There is dinner, I believe. It's $25 a head. Mm. People will be able to buy themselves some nourishment and I'm sure they'll be able to have a few beverages. And we're encouraging girls to get together and get a group of friends and come down and make it a bit of a fun night out for the girls.
To dump the blokes in the public bar and wander into the Cranbrook room.
Well, maybe even the blokes could just stay at home and cook dinner for the kids.
Well, some of them would.
Yes, absolutely. I'm sure they would. It really is important, though. We've made lots of jokes about it, but making sure that women do get together. And often that's a really safe environment where women do feel that they can start to talk about their issues and share information with each other. And I think today, Bob, with the four fantastic women that we've spoken to, professionals in their field, it just shows how many things there are to talk about, but how related they all are.
Yeah.
Everything links
does.
With each other.
Yeah, that's for sure. The other little thing I need to say, and this is especially for the podcast, is that this is just a broad and general advice and not to be taken, you know, don't listen to something that you hear here on the radio and charge off and do it, whatever it is, whether it's to do with mental or physical health, check with your health professional.
Exactly. Thank you, Bob. That's a very, very powerful message.
Indeed. And this has been another happy and probably fairly successful health check on 3ABR Community Radio in Apollo Bay.